Chair today's committee meeting. The time is 8:31, July 19, 2023, and I call the meeting of the Complaint Screening Committee of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. Ms. Michelson, will you please call the roll?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dinar?
Present.
Dr. Medina?
Present.
Dr. Stewart?
Present.
Okay, we have quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. Let's move on to approving the minutes. I'm recused on the April 19th regular session CSC meeting, so I'll ask someone else to make a motion and a second.
I move that we accept the minutes.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
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 I'm recused. Motion passes. For the June 14th regular session CSC minutes, I think Dr. Medina is recused. So I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of the June 14th CSC meeting.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
None opposed. Dr. Medina recused. Motion carries. So let's go into the case discussion section of the agenda. But before going into any particular case, I want to review for those in attendance some important things to keep in mind during this meeting. The Complaint Screening Committee, pursuant to ARS Section 32-2081, subsection H, may dismiss the complaints appearing on this agenda or refer them to the full board for consideration and action. Complaints dismissed by the committee shall not be disclosed in response to a telephone inquiry or placed on the board's website, according to ARS Section 32-2081, subsection H1. Upon a vote of a majority of the quorum, the committee may go into executive session on any item on the agenda, according to ARS Section 38-431.03, subsection A2 to review confidential records, or subsection A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Ms. Jean Galvin. Please keep in mind that the chair, which is me, reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based upon parties present. Please use initials only for patients, children, and the complainant. In addition, do not state any specific diagnosis in open session. Instead, please just say the diagnosis that is on the record, the diagnosis that is in the materials, and so forth. Keep in mind that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential, and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. Keep in mind that the committee will go into executive session to discuss any confidential records. A person or a representative of a person who has filed a complaint and is present at today's meeting may make a brief statement to the committee of up to 5 minutes, only when prompted by the chair. Additionally, the licensee or respondent who is the subject of the complaint will also have a chance to make a brief 5-minute statement only when prompted by the chair. The committee may also have questions for the complainant or respondent after their statements are made. Please note that only individuals directly involved in the complaint, which are the complainant and the respondent, may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from any other party, it will make this request during the case review. For everyone in attendance today, please ensure that your audio remains on mute. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, the respondent, and their legal representatives may unmute themselves at that time. Please note that individuals in attendance who speak out without committee approval will be warned twice by the chair not to interrupt. If the interruption continues after the second warning, the individual will be removed from the Zoom meeting and not be permitted to re-enter the meeting. So with those important preliminaries in mind, I want to actually move to the second complaint on the agenda, which is for Raymond Branton. And that's case number 23-43. Dr. Stewart, would you provide the committee with a brief overview of the complaint?
Yes, Chair, I'd be happy to. Dr. Branton is a licensed psychologist in Arizona, license number 3719. He became licensed in 2005. The complainant is the mother in a child custody case. And the complaint is of an extended period of time that after Dr. Brenton's evaluation of the family and the recommendation to be made in terms of custody, that it was some 7 months past due at the time that it was actually completed. There's also indication by the mother, by the complainant, that that Dr. Brenton failed to include pertinent materials that were available to him prior to the rendering of his report. Dr. Brenton addressed the delays in a timely fashion to the board by indicating that this was in the throes of COVID, and he and his family suffered from COVID apparently a couple of different times over that period of time, and that several of his reports failed to meet the due dates due to circumstances beyond his control. And Dr. Brenton indicated that he did fail to include a couple of points, excuse me, that the mother had made, excuse me, and that he sought to rectify that. I do not see that there was an addendum to the report. Maybe Dr. Brenton or the mother can address that. So that's a thumbnail sketch of the complaint and the response, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. At this point, I see complainant KS is present. You may unmute yourself and make a brief statement of up to 5 minutes.
All right. Can everyone hear me okay? All right. So I wrote out a few things because I didn't want to keep getting get too wordy. So yes, on June 3rd, 2021, the judge ordered a CFE and appointed Dr. Raymond Brenton as the behavioral health professional for our CFE. That report was not turned in. It was due in October. It wasn't turned in till May. So in June it started, and I remember when his family or one of his kids got COVID, but most of what we did was over the phone and over Zoom. It wasn't that initial time of COVID where they were stopping people working and stopping going to the offices. We had all learned how to do Zoom. And again, I want to also say I wanted this evaluation. My attorney and I thought it would give a clear picture to the judge. And I was told that, 95, 90% of the time, at least, the judge was going to look at this evaluator's report and make his recommendations based on that, which is exactly what happened. But this case was, for me and my kids, that was a year and a half. So that report, that 11 months was a long time. And again, with COVID, I would think when you're a doctor or a physician, you can't stop surgery. You can't stop something as important as this. There was abuse that was called out in his report. But there was 11 months to get to the end of it. I didn't lose the case. But the problem is there's long-term effects of this report. My son has Down syndrome. He's going to be 16 next month, but the custody issues, the abuse, it's never going to end with him. And this report, although I got primary residential of my daughter, my son, it basically said, since he has a hard time with transitions, we'll keep him on the same schedule of going back and forth every 7 days. So we'll keep him transitioning. I don't understand. So part of my issue is that How could one child with the abuse have one thing happen and the other one, well, he can just keep going back and forth. Another thing that was left out, medication. So my past medications were all listed in this report. To me, it just seemed like bias, and my attorney believed the same thing. Dr. Brenton did not list one of my ex's medications. So anything I had taken in the past few years, antidepressant, anything was listed. My ex, nothing. And I know he takes things on a regular basis. I know he's been prescribed opioids. He's had gout. He's had surgery. Nothing. The other thing, yes, that was left out, two of my collateral references were left out. I didn't find out until I filed this complaint that there was an addendum. So if there was an addendum filed that finally got to my two collateral references, it should have been given to my attorney, my ex's attorney. No one knew this document even existed. With regards to the collateral references, if there was 11 months, COVID or not, I just feel like a phone call should have been made. One of the collateral references was an ex-con and my ex-husband's mother. But then another reference, you know, there was therapists, there was physical therapists, educational advocates. None of those people were ever called, emailed, questioned. So why, with this kind of report, was no one called or questioned? So the people that, with their collateral references, it's all in this report. This is a long-lasting report in my eyes and will affect this, my son, for the rest of his life. We're going to go up for guardianship soon. Here comes the report again. The other thing, too, the extensions we kept having to file for trial dates, that, you know, and I'm not, I know this isn't about me, but that was money and time taken away from our kids. The report totaled $19,000 at the end of this. But again, no phone calls, nothing. Also, the original contract I signed with Dr. Brenton said that if he was going to appear in court for this trial on behalf of either of us, he must be subpoenaed. Well, my attorney never received a subpoena. We planned our trial date. It was a whole day. And then lo and behold, Dr. Brenton appeared and my attorney wasn't ready to question him. We had no idea because all of that stuff has to be given out way before the trial, the exhibits, witnesses, all that kind of thing. I also had an educational advocate that was there on my behalf. We didn't even get time to have her talk because Dr. Brenton, that whole thing went back and forth. That was a half a day. So we had to make a decision. I think I had 45 minutes that I was going to have on the stand that afternoon. And again, that person was an educational advocate. They had seen my ex in meetings, knew me, knew my child with Down syndrome. Again, people that really, I think, mattered. So yeah, the delays, the lack of references, he knew there was crises and trauma and all the situations going on for both of my children. Abuse was all called out, but then no recommendation to stop it. There's body cam footage by a police officer. The abuse is still happening today. As a matter of fact, I'm on vacation and my ex has threatened he's taking me back to court because he didn't have the address in time and all this other stuff. So for me, for my children, the abuse still happens. There's no recommendation to change that. Again, my son is still going back and forth every 7 days. This is a child with Down syndrome. And I just feel like that didn't matter. Yeah, let's get my daughter to my house. But as far as my son, he's got special needs. Well, he seems to be okay. No one spoke to him. No one looked at his records. How does he process things? How does he deal? What about his friends? It's like he didn't count. So I don't understand that at all. I recently had to start forwarding all my emails to an attorney for her review because everything that Dr. Brenton did see, did report, and knew from day one is still happening. The threats, the insinuations, you know, we're still dealing with that. Nothing has changed. And again, it was the scope of the order that the court gave. It says a CFE typically involves 20 plus hours of professional services. More collateral witnesses are typically contacted. This is, again, the court's writing. That didn't happen. Assessment of the child's developmental needs. That certainly didn't happen with my son. Recommended therapeutic interventions. What happened to all that? And yes, a timely written report. The evaluator shall prepare a written report due October 1st, 2021. We didn't get it until May. And it was too late to change anything else. I guess we could have tried to push out the trial another 3 months, but that wasn't going to be fair to my children. I mean, there's just a lot of things left out. There seemed to be bias. Dr. Branton's business partner was a counselor for my ex, or therapist for my ex. And even my ex and I had gone to him jointly before we divorced. All the notes were there except for the one or two times that I went with my ex or I went alone. Those notes were left out. Then there was another therapist I'd seen. I gave him all the information. Her notes aren't in there. Nothing she said. And I asked, what about this therapist? Did you talk to her? Did you get her information? And Dr. Branton told me, no, I didn't. Do you have her notes? And again, this was in May. It was too late to do anything. So there was so much information that I thought got left out that, again, COVID or not, emails, phone calls could have happened. There was a therapeutic interventionist that reported to Dr. Branton, and all of her notes aren't there. So again, he had access to her, I know, because I don't think she reported to him, but she's a contractor under their company. You know, I could go on.
Yes,
is there any questions you have?
Thank you, Case, for being here. Are there any questions at this time for Case from Dr. Stewart, Dr. Medina?
Not at this time, Chair.
Not at this time, Mr. Diner.
Thank you. So now we'll move on to Dr. Branton, and I believe he's represented by Attorney Andrew Turk. If Mr. Turk is here, either of you can start by making a statement, introduce yourselves, and you'll have 5 minutes as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Andrew Turk. I'm here. Dr. Branton is available, but off camera at the moment. Thank you for the opportunity to address the complaint and for moving the matter up on the calendar so that Dr. Branton can address his special needs child. Basically, I think what the committee just heard is that the complainant is just not happy with the court's rulings, and she continues to be unhappy with her ex-husband. And there was no presentation of unprofessional conduct. In this case, there are some threshold issues. The administrative code R4-26309 subsection B requires that the board return a complaint to the complainant with instructions to seek an order from the court that there's a substantial basis for the complaint. That has not been done. Noticeably absent from the record is anything from the court chastising or admonishing Dr. Branton for allegedly, for missing the date. Clearly, the proceedings dragged on. The committee's been provided with a copy of the report, and it's one that clearly a lot of time was spent. But to Dr. Branton's knowledge, and he no longer has access to the file, claimant is never, because he's not actively assigned to the case, so he can't access the current file. But claimant has never submitted this matter to the court. Presumably, if the claimant had an order from the court stating that there was a substantial basis for the complaint, that would have been provided to the committee. Since that was never done, the committee should not move forward, and the matter should be dismissed and given back to the complainant to follow up with the court without any further action being taken. A closely related issue to that is the immunity that is provided by Dr. Branton by the court order, which again, we believe precludes any action from being taken in this matter. And also, though not raised in the written response, there's been no showing by the board so far that we're aware of compliance with 32.2801C, which requires a pre-screening of the complaint before this committee meets. We also wonder whether there's issues there. Now, there are a lot of issues that were raised by the complainant. I'm going to try and touch on kind of the big ones. First of all, towards the end of her statement, she raised this issue of conflict and communications that she and or her ex had had with other people who are affiliated with Dr. Branton. And any claim that was improper, undisclosed, is just completely belied by the court, by the record. The court overruled the party's initial objections made by claimant's counsel. Dr. Branton fully disclosed all the potential conflicts with counsel. Claimant's counsel acknowledged that the conflicts were addressed. There were no actual conflicts because Dr. Branton never saw these folks before, nor did he make any money off the fact that the other people had. Claimant was initially resistant, but then withdrew her objections, and we provided a copy of her email in which she heartily endorsed Dr. Branton's appointment, and she sent an email saying that she was completely on board with him. And there's no basis for the board to hold Dr. Branton responsible for whether records were maintained or kept by another professional. He clearly made every effort to obtain the records that were relevant. And if there were missing records in another professional's file, that's not something that he's responsible for. But importantly, claimant and her ex-husband both signed an addendum indicating that they accepted Dr. Branton's disclosures regarding those individuals, and they moved forward. So there's no basis for finding of an unprofessional conduct in relation to this alleged conflict of interest. As to the timeliness of the report, Dr. Branton, as set forth in some detail in the written response, has acknowledged that it took longer than expected to complete the report. The claimant's representations regarding COVID are incomplete and inaccurate, and we provided a lot of information again in the written report. That it's not just a matter of whether Dr. Branton or a family member had COVID, and Dr. Branton has reported that it did occur several times, but it also shifted responsibilities, as it would in any family, for what needed to be done. And if somebody in the family had COVID, they had to be taken care of. And that was reported in some detail in the written report. But with regard to the report itself, it's important to keep in mind that, again, there's nothing from the court indicating that there was a problem with the delivery of it. It's a complex case with a large volume of documents, including videos, as the claimant mentioned. The parties provided supplemental documents and information over the course of the report that was being created. It's a very, very detailed report. It's 120 pages long. In her written complaint, complainant complained about what was in the collateral source statements. Dr. Branton's not responsible for that. The statements regarding the two collateral sources that were overlooked is completely incorrect. An addendum was provided. We provided a copy of it to the board. It was provided to claimant's attorney. If she didn't see it, that's on the attorney. That's not on Dr. Branton. And I say that as an attorney. Claimant also asserts that she was unclear about the process at times. The record doesn't support that. We've provided the board with copies of emails that she sent to Dr. Branton where she was submitting things. And again, she was represented by counsel throughout the process. And so if she had questions about what the process was, she had counsel to talk to. Dr. Branton didn't work for her. He was working for the court. And again, that's made clear in the records. Now, there's some miscellaneous matters, this trial testimony issue. We've provided the documentation. Dr. Branton was, in fact, subpoenaed. There were emails back and forth with both counsel about the fact that he would be testifying. If the claimant's counsel was not prepared for the fact that Dr. Branton was going to testify, that is not Dr. Branton's fault. If they ran out of time because Dr. Branton took longer to testify, not Dr. Branton's fault. We've provided the board with a copy of the subpoena. We've provided the board with copies of the emails back and forth in which Dr. Branton specifically says, in order for me to appear, I need to be subpoenaed. I will waive service and you can send it to me by email. And then the subpoena was sent. We provided a copy. But to the extent that the claimant's counsel or the claimant was not prepared and they didn't get to present everything that they wanted to at the trial, that's a lawyer problem, not a Dr. Branton problem. He was subpoenaed. He showed up. He testified. That was what he was supposed to do. You heard the complainant talk about what other people are doing and the things are continuing. Again, not Dr. Branton's fault. The judge specifically did not find abuse as to the child who is still going back and forth between the homes, and found no finding of domestic abuse or violence by either party. And there are specific findings in the court's order about the fact that the ex father and the child with disabilities have a close bond and a loving bond. And what this really comes down to is that the claimant is just not happy with the court's orders, but the court's orders were made by the court, not by Dr. Branton. Despite everything that's been thrown out there, there's no showing of harm. Plaintiff has not met her threshold requirement, or claimant rather, for showing that this matter is one that can be heard by the board, let alone one in which the discipline is proper. There's been no compliance with the Arizona Administrative Code. And for that reason, and because of Dr. Branton's judicial immunity, the complaint should just be dismissed. There shouldn't be any further hearings. And you know, frankly, it's Dr. Branton's position that this portion of the committee's meeting should be ended, because they don't have authority under the committee doesn't have authority under the Administrative Code, the board's own rules, to move forward, because the claimant hasn't received the order from the court saying that there's a substantial basis. But even if the committee isn't persuaded by that kind of administrative and procedural argument, there's no showing of unprofessional conduct, as that term is defined in ARS section 3226 2061 subsection 16. The majority of the acts and omissions set forth in the statute are neither present or even alleged in this case. Not a single one of the 30 acts defined as unprofessional conduct has been proven here. For all these reasons, the committee should dismiss the complaint and no further action should be taken. And I'm happy to answer any questions that the members of the committee may have. And I'm sure the same holds true of Dr. Branton. But thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Turk. And Dr. Branton, if you can come within the Zoom video frame, we would appreciate that. Thank you for being here, Dr. Branton. Before we turn to some of the questions that committee members may have to ask you, I want to address the threshold issues that Mr. Turk raised. As far as the review process, the board member review process in 2081 is concerned, we always review, three reviewers review all of these complaints before they come to this committee. And I believe this particular complaint was requested to be put on the complaint screening committee's agenda by at least one of those reviewers. As to your second argument regarding Arizona Administrative Code, I believe you're referring to the court order appointing Dr. Branton as the behavioral health professional for the committee members. It's at page 25. So before moving on to the allegations of unprofessional conduct, I want to see if any of the committee members have questions regarding circumstances surrounding that particular court order appointing Dr. Branton.
May I provide some clarity, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
There are two issues. There is the issue of immunity in the order, but the Arizona Administrative Code, and we've cited it, it's on page 5 and 6, or page 5 of the response. The Administrative Code says that if a complaint is filed against a psychologist who conducts an evaluation, treatment, or psychoeducation under a court order, The board shall return the complaint to the complainant with instructions that the court issuing the order must find there's a substantial basis to refer the complaint for consideration by the board. So the court's order is only important because it is a precondition to this section of the administrative code. And what we don't have is any evidence that the complainant has complied with this and gone to the court and gotten a statement that there is a substantial basis to refer the complaint for consideration by the board. And absent that, the board can't take any action. So the order of appointment is important because it says if the psychologist is appointed by the court and that order establishes that he was, and then this requirement needs to be met. The complainant has to get a statement of substantial basis from the appointing court saying, yeah, the complaint should go forward. That hasn't been done. So under the board's
own... Thank you, Mr. Turk. I understand your legal argument. My question was more along the lines of what's the factual predicate that is necessary for that legal argument. And I believe the factual predicate is the court order appointing Dr. Branton as the behavioral health. So I just wanted clarification, a simple yes or no on that.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
Is that a yes?
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Would the committee care to receive legal advice on the applicability of R-426-309?
Yes, that was going to be my next step. I move to go into executive session for legal advice.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed. The motion carries.
Just all three committee members are present for the record. Thank you. Sorry.
Thank you, Ms. Gavin. No, I apologize. It's 9:09 and we are back in open session. So with respect to the threshold issue regarding the applicability of Arizona Administrative Code Section 309, the committee's position is that that section does not apply to family court matters like this one. It only applies to matters brought under ARS Section 32-2081, subsection B, which is sort of, you know, sexual offender type cases. So we can proceed in this committee to addressing the allegations of unprofessional conduct. So at this time, I'll see if any of the committee members have questions to ask Dr. Branton or his attorney, Mr. Turk. Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, a question for Dr. Branton or Mr. Turk. Now, it's my understanding that Dr. Branton was subpoenaed to appear in court to testify. Is that correct?
Yes, and we provided a copy of the subpoena to the committee in response.
I saw it on the record. I just want a verbal response. So second point is the alleged conflict of interest because the mother and father had either individually or conjointly seen a counselor employed in the same agency in which Dr. Branton works. That was explained fully beforehand. Is that correct?
Yes. And again, we provided a copy to the committee of Dr. Branton's notes, and an addendum agreement was sent out after that discussion with counsel, and both the complainant and her ex-husband signed that acknowledging that they were aware of what's being complained of now.
And am I allowed to add to that conflict?
I'm asking a question.
Not at this point, Kiss. I apologize.
Okay.
Dr. Branton, at the end of this, and because of concerns and issues raised, did Dr. Branton complete an addendum to his report, and did he send that to the court, as well as the respective attorneys?
Yes, and again, a copy is provided to the committee.
I have no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Let me see if Dr. Medina has any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Diner. I do have a question. It was stated that there were no records from the mother's previous therapist. Is that something that you had requested?
To my recollection, any records that they thought were relevant were to be provided to me. At times, I will directly contact providers to request records, but that is not the only process in which I receive records. At times, the party's attorneys will provide me any records they deem relevant, and I'm always open to receive those records. If they believed it was relevant, it should have been provided to me.
Was that explained to both to mother and father?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. No further questions.
Thank you, Dr. Medina. Let me see just to make sure if any committee members have questions to ask KS in light of what we have heard and in light of what we have reviewed in the case materials. Yes, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, KS, when did you become aware that an addendum to Dr. Branton's report had been completed?
I became aware when, after the complaint was filed, they asked if I could provide some additional information. One of the things they asked for was an addendum, and I said, there isn't one. And I don't remember if she said where to go, or I looked at the court's records. That's when I saw it. So it was a few months back.
Who is she that you mentioned?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Michelson.
Okay. What a follow-up, if I may. At what point did you find out that Dr. Branton had been subpoenaed? Apparently, he was subpoenaed by the father's attorney, as I understand it. So that should have been on a list of witnesses. At what point was it in court that you became aware of it? And who's going to testify?
No, I never was aware of that. I did not see a subpoena, and everything goes to both attorneys as well as the court's subpoenas, filings, motion. There was no subpoena to my knowledge. I think my attorney was very capable, very competent. We did not know. He did not know that he was subpoenaed for this court, for that hearing.
Might I ask either Mr. Dinar or Ms. Michelson, what page in our materials is the subpoena?
Dr. Stewart, committee members, I believe the subpoena is on page 440.
Okay, thank you. I have no further questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Any further questions for KS or the respondent, Dr. Branton? Yes, Dr. Medina.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Diner. I would like to hear how you explain, and I know there were some reasons given, but a delay by 7 months is a very long delay. How do you account for all that time?
I think if the board will allow, we can maybe both of us can respond to that. I think we've shown you that there was a lot of documentation, including videos submitted that were clearly reviewed. The process was protracted. It's not as if Dr. Branton received a bunch of documents in May and then took or, you know, after the order and then took months to review them. There was things being submitted as they went along, I'll let Dr. Branton address them more specifically, but my understanding is that there were various issues of COVID exposure and that required them to be sequestered or quarantined, plus actual bouts of COVID where either Dr. Branton had COVID, which prevented him from working, or where his spouse had COVID and therefore he was picking up and doing the things that she would normally do that interfered with work. And they were taking care of their child. And as, and I'm trying to be very careful because I don't want to cause a HIPAA violation on my own, but as we've reported to the board, Dr. Branton's son is also special needs. And he had some very significant medical issues that not only required care and participation by Dr. Branton, but required that they go out of state to receive those care issues. And it's interesting that it seems that the claimant, part of the reason she wanted Dr. Branton is because of his experience with a special needs child, but she is discounting the fact that his special needs child might impact his ability under these circumstances, particularly exigent circumstances with the medical problems he's been having, to take care of those problems. And Dr. Branton, again, we provided copies of emails that were specifically referenced in the letter as well as the entire file. And then that is something that did impact on his time significantly. And I would also point out that there is no separate and apart from the issue of compliance with the code. And just for the record, we disagree with the board's interpretation of that. But there is nothing from the court indicating that the court was displeased with Dr. Branton. There's nothing from the court indicating that the October deadline was something that the court was hounding Dr. Branton for and saying, you missed this deadline, what is going on? And in fact, everything indicates that the parties were all moving forward and doing their best to get everything done. And if Dr. Branton has anything he wants to add to that, of course.
Yes, thank you. During the pandemic and coming out of the pandemic, all cases were delayed. This is something that everyone was aware of. And as we proceeded with this case, any of the delays were discussed with the parties as well as the attorneys, and the court was made aware. And so there was understanding and agreement that the case was simply taking longer than expected. And in these types of comprehensive family evaluations, that is not an atypical situation. And so we simply do our best to communicate about it and request for extension of the court, which the court granted. And so there was nothing that was done secretively to the delays were known and understood, and there was conversation between all involved about how time consuming this was, and then anything that was causing delays. So it was actually surprising to me to get the complaint, with that being one of the concerns, because it was something that was known and discussed and accepted and understood at the time, and the court approved of the extensions.
Thank you. No further questions.
Thank you, Dr. Medina. Any other questions that committee members have? Hearing none, let's go into the deliberations. Please keep in mind, for those in attendance, that deliberation is the time for the committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without any interruptions from the complainants, licensees, attorneys representing licensees, or any other individuals. So Dr. Stewart, since you are the lead on this case, would you please start us?
Thank you, Mr. Dinar. cases like this are always contentious. Any child custody evaluation is contentious. And I do not believe that an examiner or psychologist will come out unscathed, and regardless of how the report is written. There are some, perhaps miscommunication. I think if the mother was unaware that a subpoena for Dr. Branton had been issued, you know, that seems to be an attorney problem. I think Mr. Turk probably hit the bullseye on that one. In terms of the conflict of interest, I think as a dual role did exist. However, it was explained. I don't see anything nefarious about it. The delay of the report was perhaps unavoidable. I don't know if the licensee, Dr. Branton, could have been more diligent, perhaps, in communicating the delays and why. I don't know what he could have done differently. I think working in this area myself as a forensic psychologist, we see that the courts become clogged at various times trying to get everything accomplished. And it can be a very slow process. So a 7-month delay on a report sounds outside of the norm for me, hearing that, as to whether that's adequately explained or not. I think there was an explanation. The standard of practice is still an issue. The examiner is reliant upon the attorneys in the case to provide information, to provide contact resources and how to get in touch with them, or to provide outright information and documents. The examiner would have a tough go if he or she had to track down each and every resource. And so for convenience as well as efficacy, those documents are normally supplied by the representing attorneys. I'm just not seeing, I think the mother has certainly made some salient points, but I'm not, in looking at the entire picture, I'm not seeing anything that is a professional violation or of standards. I'm not seeing anything that rises to that level. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Dr. Medina, do you have any thoughts for the deliberation part of this?
Thank you, Mr. Diner. I will say I do agree with Dr. Stewart's points. It at some points it's hard to discern, if you will, or I guess attribute some things seem to be an attorney issue and not necessarily a psychologist issue or an evaluator issue. So I do agree with Dr. Seward's points.
Thank you, Dr. Medina. And in my evaluation, when I was looking at the materials, I was also looking at our unprofessional conduct statute, subsection 16, and I was struggling to see exactly, you know, what sort of violations there would be. So I tend to agree with both of you, Dr. Stewart and Dr. Medina. Is there a motion at this point? Dr. Stewart.
I move that the case be dismissed.
I'll second that. There's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed, the motion carries. Thank you, KS, and thank you, Dr. Branton, for being here. If you have any further follow-up, you can reach out to our board staff.
Thank you very much. Have a good day, everybody. And again, thank you for moving us up on the agenda. We really appreciate it.
I would still like 10 seconds to say I never had a problem. Kiss. There's no conflict of interest.
I'm sorry, Kiss. This is not okay. The time. Thank you.
That's okay. I just had to get that in. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if we may, I think it would make sense to go to agenda item 4C for Dr. Gilbert's complaint since the parties are present here today.
Excellent. Yeah, let's do that. So let's move on to 4C, which is complaint or case number 23-51 against Holly Joubert. I apologize if I'm saying your name incorrectly. For this, we again have Dr. Stewart to provide us a brief overview. You're muted, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you.
I apologize. I just actually want to double check. I did see Dr. Gilbert's attorney present a few minutes ago, but I don't see him now. Dr. Akins, can you please confirm that you're present?
I am here, but I don't know that Dr. Gilbert is. I'm calling her as we speak. Things moved along a little faster this morning than I think we expected. The general time frame that had been suggested was that her hearing probably wouldn't be taking place till about 10. So I instructed her to please call in at 9:45. And I'm just getting her voicemail now. So I would respectfully request that perhaps if we could, is it possible that we skip Dr. Gilbert for the moment? I see that you have two other title matters on. Could we perhaps stroll through those and then return back? And I'll continue to try and get a hold of Dr. Gilbert.
Thank you, Dr. Akins. So yeah, with that request, let's table 4C and actually let's go to 4A because it won't take a lot of time. So 4A is case number 23-44 against Neil Olshan. And I believe Ms. Michelson has an update on the case to give to the committee.
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Committee members, this complaint was initially scheduled for the CSC's review at their June 14th meeting. Back on May 11th, I notified Dr. Olshan and his attorney, Andrew Brevington, that the complaint had been scheduled for that June meeting date. Upon receiving this notification, Mr. Brevington requested a continuance, citing that Dr. Olshan had a scheduled dental procedure for which he would be unavailable to attend that June meeting date. Upon receiving a doctor's note, board staff granted that continuance and notified Mr. Brevington that the complaint would be reviewed by the committee in July, today's meeting date, and that no additional continuance requests would be approved by board staff. At the time that I had notified the attorney that the case would be rescheduled for the CSC's review today, they had more than 2 months' notice. At approximately 8 p.m. last night, I received an email from Mr. Brevington indicating that his flight from Cleveland, which was originally expected to arrive earlier this morning, was delayed several hours and that the flight would not be expected to depart until 9:30 right now. He notified me that due to the new flight time, he would not be able to attend and was requesting a continuance, which is before the committee for review today. The committee can approve or deny the continuance request, and if denied, the case review will proceed as scheduled today. And I do just want to reiterate that they had more than 2 months' notice of today's meeting, and staff has already approved one continuance request. So please let me know if there are any questions, and the committee may certainly wish to receive legal advice from Ms. Galvin. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. So we have sort of the continuance question to keep in mind. And also, I believe there's some legal advice that some of the committee members may have to ask Ms. Galvin. So let me make a motion to go into executive session for legal advice.
Second.
There's a motion and second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. None opposed. The motion carries. All right, it is 9:38 and we are back in the open session. I see all of the committee members are present. So with respect to the continuance request, the committee member's position is to deny that request. We have had multiple continuances. So, you know, we are opening, we are reviewing this case against Dr. Olshan. And I believe because Dr. Olshan is absent, we can go into deliberations and see if there are any potential violations that we need to refer to the full board through this complaint screening committee. So since Dr. Medina was the lead on this, do you want to get us started, Dr. Medina?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Diner. Yes, I do think it's warranted to send to the full board for review. I am particularly concerned about ARS 32-2061, A16 Section DD, which is violating an ethical standard adopted by the board, and specifically APA standards 3.05 and 3.06. In conflict of interest as his actions in offering to connect the complainant with an investor impair Dr. Olshan's effectiveness in performing his functions as a psychologist.
Dr. Stewart.
I certainly concur with Dr. Medina's assessment, having reviewed these records and having seen the delays involved in this. I think it would be prudent to refer the matter to the full board.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. I concur. So I'll make a motion to refer this case to the full board for possible violations of 32-2061 A16 subsection DD, as it refers to ethical standards 3.05 and 3.06. And part of that referral is we want the board to be aware that the committee denied the continuance request. And there is some pattern of continuances in this case. And I also state for the record that the complainant was not present and Dr. Olshan was not present as well. Ms. Galvin?
If I may, we always want to ensure that we provide every possible statutory violation that may be found. I don't know if the board has any other possible grounds between, in addition to 16DD 3.05, 3.06. I didn't know if that perhaps engaging or offering to engage as a psychologist in activities that are not congruent with the psychologist's professional education, training, and experience that may be related to promoting, seeking, suggesting this dual relationship. I don't know if you want to include that as a possible violation.
I'll include that in my motion just in case. So, you know, the full board can then discuss and deliberate on that. I'll amend my motion to that effect. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I had one other suggested possible violation for the committee to consider. Section 3.03 of the APA code is other harassment, which may be applicable to Dr. Olshan, sent the messages that he sent to the complainant after the complaint was filed, and they may wish to consider 3.04 avoiding harm. So I just wanted to make the committee aware of those sections to see if they wanted to include that or not.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. I'll amend the motion to include DD as it relates to 3.03.
Second.
All right, there is a motion and second on the table. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. None opposed, the motion carries. And Ms. Galvin, if for whatever reason we need to subpoena Dr. Olshan for attendance at the board meeting, do you need a motion or is that included or implicit in the motion that we just voted on?
I think your comment just made it very clear to staff.
Okay, thank you. All right, then let me just quickly see if Dr. Akins was able to reach out to Dr. Joubert, and if they're present, we can go to 4C.
This is Dr. Akins. I have left several messages for her and so far have not reached her directly. I would anticipate that she would be logging on just in any minute, in expectation of what we thought was going to be the schedule for today. Things change. Obviously, it's our responsibility to stay on top of the timing of these meetings. That's why I'm here. Unfortunately, I don't think we want to proceed without the licensee. So I would once again respectfully ask if we might perhaps take the one or both of the title matters. And I'm certain by then that we will have Dr. Joubert. And if not, I'm fully prepared to provide a defense for her today.
Thank you, Dr. Akins. I appreciate that. So I'll invoke my chair's privilege to take a 5-minute recess for a comfort break. We'll come back at round number, maybe 50 minutes past, and then we can see where things are. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
And we're back with the Complaint Screening Committee of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners. So Ms. Pekkanen or Ms. Michelson, where are we at in terms of availability?
Mr. Chair, we can go back to agenda item 4C for Dr. Joubert's case. I see that she's present along with her attorney, Dr. Akins, as well as the complainant.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. All right, then we'll go to 4C, the case number 2351 against Holly Joubert. I apologize if I'm saying your last name incorrectly. Dr. Stewart, would you please provide the committee with a brief overview?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Am I saying the name correctly, Joubert?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. This is a case, a complaint against Holly Joubert, a licensed psychologist. Dr. Joubert graduated from University of Denver in 2005. And has been a licensed psychologist in Arizona since 2008. The complainant is the mother involved in a child custody case. And the mother indicates that she was misdiagnosed by the psychologist, by Dr. Joubert, and that the psychologist made numerous mistakes in fact in her report. Mother found, quote, at least 181 problems with Dr. Joubert's report, close quote. And that Dr. Joubert ignored the father's violent history. Dr. Joubert indicates that she was a court-ordered evaluator in this case. Let me go back to the complaint, original complaint, that Dr. Joubert went to high school with the father of the children involved, and that there is a conflict of interest is alleged there, a dual role. Dr. Joubert indicated that she had no knowledge that she had gone to high school with the father until she actually did the evaluation, and that the father attended a session. There's indication here that Dr. Joubert did not get a written authorization that she disclosure. This was not written. It was in verbal under the notice section of her report. Dr. Joubert indicated that through the psychological testing, that there were various elevated scales, one of which was a scale that has symptoms that the mother indicates are not accurate. And that's a thumbnail sketch of the case.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. So at this time, I see complainant EP or ED present. If you are here, please unmute yourself and state only your initials for the record. And this is your opportunity to make a statement to the board of up to 5 minutes.
Hi, my initials ED now. And yes, I'm in a very high conflict divorce case with a person who fits all the criteria for antisocial personality disorder. I provided 8 pages of that evidence and that was ignored. He has made threats for years to keep me in this state of slavery, really providing everything for him. He's made threats to make things up, to have me thrown in a psych ward, make things up to have me arrested, make things up to have the kids taken by CPS or DCS in Arizona. Those threats escalated to death threats to me and the children and the pets and himself. He actually put a loaded gun in his mouth 2 feet from me. My daughter has witnessed him punching me in the head a few years ago when we were trying to get her to her Grand Canyon trip, and he had been up drinking all night as usual. And it was 5 a.m. and he got irate that I was in the bathroom a little too long because of my issues from the medication I was taking for Lyme disease. So all these things, he's threatened for years. He's never worked enough to even pay into Social Security. Like I said, he fits all the criteria for antisocial personality disorder, which I understand is in layman's terms, sociopathy and psychopathy. I provided so much documentation to Dr.
Ms. Joubert. E. P., if I may remind you, don't discuss any diagnosis on the record, please.
Okay, sorry. The thing is that she was ignoring all these things that I gave her. And 4 months into the evaluation, she decided to disclose to me that she went to high school with my soon-to-be ex. She claimed she didn't know him, but she did admit to knowing all of the names he was dropping. And she said all those people were people that they were afraid of in high school, because I said they committed these crimes. I listed them off. She said, yes, they did far worse. So I find it really hard to believe, with Predens being a very unique name. There's one Predens family in the entire United States. And after having tracked down people from Sabino High School around the time they both went to school, I've spoken to many of them. They said that my soon-to-be ex was one of the most popular kids in high school. Everyone knew who he was. He threw all kinds of alcohol-fueled parties at his house, and she likely attended. So I'm trying to get those people to come forward. They're in fear of retaliation from my soon-to-be ex because of his physically and psychologically violent behavior and his retaliatory nature. For instance, he would drill out tires of people in our neighborhood who were parked incorrectly, according to him. He would have teenagers in the neighborhood egg houses. He is extremely retaliatory. My daughter has written about it in a letter to the court that hasn't been admitted to the court yet, but I sent to you, where she speaks about how he raged at her for over an hour when she had just showered, sitting there in a towel, sobbing, because in a court interview that was done on July 6th of this past year, she spoke of the threats he's made to the children, the threats and intimidation, and the threats to that she'd go to foster care if she said anything bad about him. I suspect she said something about the death threats too. The court interviewer just wisely didn't put them in the summary because she was trying to protect my kids. She did say she would make a report to DCS. She made a report to DCS. DCS did not follow up. My soon-to-be ex has 2 friends who are social workers with DCS here in Tucson. He also has a friend who's a 20-year veteran of TPD. So while my soon-to-be ex has committed 4 felonies against me, including revenge porn, which I discovered when I went back through the emails. I provided Dr. Joubert about 20 pages of emails showing my soon-to-be ex's cheating. And while cheating isn't something that really factors into a divorce case, it does when you're talking about credibility. And in her report, she falsely accuses me of cheating and falsely accusing of my soon-to-be ex of cheating. I have thousands of pages of his emails from 2 or 3 different, well, 2 relatively more recent email accounts, one that was more distant past. I've got thousands of pages of those emails showing that he was very much cheating to the abusive level. If he was doing that, how do you think he was treating me? I am the one who was coercively controlled, not him. He had to know where I was all of the time. He was stalking me through my phone. My friends have told me get a new phone when he's, if my mom calls up right after we're talking about something and says, Matt just called me and says this specific thing that my friend and I were both talking about just then. And she looks at me and she says, I told you get rid of that phone. He has stalked me. I reported 5 incidents of stalking, electronic stalking to TPD. They did nothing. I reported 10 incidents of physical stalking to TPD. They did nothing. Recently, he has ignored every judge's order that has told him to do something he doesn't want to do. And recently, he took extensive property from my house that was awarded to me, that was ruled my sole and separate property, including $15,000 worth of Persian rugs. And that was awarded to me, well, that was awarded to me, ruled my sole and separate property, or in dispute. All of those things were ruled to stay in the house, were ordered to stay in the house. And he flouted that because, as is part of what I was speaking of earlier, he has complete disregard for authority. He's been committing crimes since he was 15, committing crimes or doing things that were socially unacceptable, like having sex since he was 15. All these things were told to Dr. Joubert. My daughter, my 17-year-old daughter, who's gotten a 5 on her AP psychology test, wrote a 6-page letter about how, thank God, the 10 days when my soon-to-be ex was out of the house and I had the house, I had the 3 children, I had all 8 pets, it was the best 10 days that she could remember in her life. He came into her life when she was 1.5 years. And he's treated her like crap the whole time. I knew psychological abuse was very hard to prove, so I waited till I could document it, and I waited till my children were old enough, and my children and I had discussions for years about how to cope with the rage, with the tyranny, with the abuse. We had discussions, protective of my children's psyche, not psychologically abusive. I have never psychologically abused my children, as Dr. Joubert falsely accused me. It is in the court interview where my daughter talks about how, where my 14-year-old daughter talks about how my soon-to-be ex says disparaging things about my character, like calling me crazy, like talking to, like how she was right there within earshot. And he knew when he was talking to his friends about how he told me to kill myself. And of course I didn't, because I'm a pussy. That's exactly what he said right there when my daughter's right there. And Holly Joubert gave him a pass, as she did with everything else, even though she caught him lying about something indisputable, like that he'd never been in trouble with the law. And yet he's convicted of a misdemeanor for a CPS case we had in California. Granted, it was a false accusation of physical abuse. What was going on with psychological abuse, my daughter couldn't put a name to it because she was 1.5, or she was 3 at the time of that case. But anyway, Dr. Joubert caught him in lies, yet still chose to believe him and his friend's lies over me. All the objective tests I passed with flying colors. I have been through numerous evaluations in my life. I passed the FBI stage 1 with flying colors. They called me and asked me if I would do phase 2. I was a single mom at the time, so I said no. I had clearances in the military. I had all kinds of evaluations. Since this has started, I've been evaluated by 4 different psychiatrists, 2 psychologists, and I'm in constant in weekly therapy with an interpersonal violence team lead. All of them say what I have gone through and what I have displayed is normal trauma response after years and years and years of narcissistic abuse and sociopathic abuse. The diagnosis that she gave my soon-to-be ex was accurate, but it was short of the mark. He is what she diagnosed him as. I am not anything she diagnosed me as. I am not histrionic. I share all this that I've gone through over the past few years. I've tried to talk to anyone. We tell abusers to speak up, to get help. I've been trying to get help from friends, neighbors, anyone who could help me to get this abuser out of our lives. The kids were begging me for years to divorce him and get him out. I couldn't do it until things were well enough documented. Well, I've got thousands of pages of documentation now, and apparently it didn't matter because Dr. Joubert gave him a pass because she went to high school with him. And she knew him, even though she denies it. She should have recused herself. And if she is a forensic psychologist, and let's say she is telling the truth and she didn't know him, she could have very easily found it out when she was doing a conflict of interest check. Attorneys do that. Why didn't she? So she gave a fellow Sabino Sabercat a pass. Gave him a mild diagnosis. And even though she acknowledged in her own report that he has no interest in the children, He didn't raise them. I'm the one who did all the raising of them. I'm the one who carried them for 9 months. I'm the one who nursed them for a year. I'm the one who scrubbed gravel out of their knee when they got dragged by the dog, and they're sitting there gripping my arm, crying in pain, but I'm trying to get it out because I don't want it to be infected. And they trust me enough to let me do that and sit there and let me scrub out their knee because I'm the mom who has cared for them their whole lives. I never threatened to kill my children. He and his friends have been lying this whole case, as he has threatened to do for years, to make things up, to get the kids from me, because he knows that will hurt me the most. Dr. Joubert has been facilitating and enabling and encouraging this post-separation abuse. She has been enabling the abuser. She has been helping him to continue the legal abuse, the cancellations. He has sole custody of my kids right now. She could have saved us from all of this pain that the courts have done injustice by believing the liar over me and my kids. My kids keep saying they want to live with me. She was giving them softball interviews like, what do you like about your dad? What do you like to do with your dad? Not asking them, okay, so are you afraid of either of your parents? And giving them the opportunity. Have either of your parents ever threatened you? My kids have heard the death threats. We know someone who killed his son for divorce revenge and then killed himself. We know someone who killed his wife because he found out she was going to divorce him and then killed himself. We know 4 victims of murder and suicide. And when the man in our Cub Scout pack killed his son for divorce revenge, the kids and I looked at each other and we said, oh, crap. He's totally capable of doing that. When I asked my son right before I filed, I asked my kids, should I just talk to him? It could be up to 45 days before he's out of the house. Or should I blindside him? My son immediately blindside him. He says, blindside him. I don't want him in the house with us when we're sleeping. I don't want to be having my head blown off like Sebastian did. My kids fear him. My kids told me to my face, file. I said, do you want me to go through with it knowing how ugly it would be? They said, do it. We'd rather die than live with him anymore. And Dr. Joubert has put my kids with an abusive, what I can't say the word because it's public, but I have 8 pages of documentation of examples of how he fits all the criteria for that diagnosis. And 2 psychiatrists have told me you're right to be concerned and take his threats seriously, because sociopaths do kill their kids for divorce revenge. My kids and I know it. My kids and I fear what he would do if he doesn't get his way. We're the ones who are the victims here. One of the 3 women in her lifetime is physically or sexually abused by her partner. Mr. Predids, my soon-to-be ex, has sexually assaulted me. I gave Dr. Joubert graphic detail of it, and I almost threw up in court when he was getting to tell his version of his assault, his most egregious assault on me. He has stolen tens of thousands of dollars worth of personal and sentimental items from me. He took my 14-karat gold naval aviator wings that my mom pinned on me when I got them in 2000. He took my jewelry box. He took things that can't be replaced. He took $15,000 in Persian rugs alone. That's a felony. The sexual assault's a felony. The revenge porn is a felony that I discovered when I had to go painfully back through these thousands of emails with him and Craigslist people, looking at what the person I took care of for all these years, I gave everything to, looking how he betrayed me, looking how he was promising my things, my stolen separate property to other people, to his Craigslist sex partners, promising my condo, promising my trucks. How am I paranoid or delusional? How am I paranoid or delusional when I see him promising people my stuff? How is he going to get it if I'm still around? Maybe he's going to follow through on all this that he actually made. So
thank you, Edie. Yeah. We have gone over 5 minutes. So if you can summarize quickly, I would appreciate it.
Okay. Bottom line is, she was given more than enough evidence to properly diagnose my ex, and she failed. She gave him a pass. All the objective tests show I have no diagnosis, but normal trauma response. All that she has diagnosed me with has come solely from my soon-to-be ex's lies and his friends' lies. His friends who support him because they think I'm so mean for kicking him out when he doesn't have a job. Well, he can go stay at his parents. She gave him a pass because she went to high school with them. Whether it was consciously or subconsciously, just knowing that, oh, someone she's known from her school couldn't have done something like this. Well, he's abusive. My kids are in danger, not super bad danger right now while he's getting his way in the courts. But as soon as the judge starts being fair and giving me back what I deserve and holding him accountable, my kids will be in danger of imminent. I mean, they will be in imminent danger of up to and including possible death. He has threatened to kill them. Holly Joubert has put my children in danger. She has contradicted herself in the report. She went to high school with him and she gave him a pass. And she has put herself above her profession. She is corrupt and she needs to be held accountable, or women like me will continue to be criminalized, vilified for trying to leave our abusers. Something has to be done, and I appreciate if you would do it.
Thank you, Edie, and thank you for being here. At this time, let me see if any of the committee members have any questions for Edie. Yes, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Chair. I don't have any questions at this time.
All right. So
I do not have any questions either. Thank you, Ms.
Thank you, Dr. Medina. So at this time, let's move on to Dr. Joubert. Joubert, I apologize. I see you're here and Dr. Akins is here as well. You may unmute yourselves, introduce yourselves to the committee, and then you may make a brief statement of up to 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Dr. Farron Akins. I'm counsel for the licensee. I'll let her introduce herself, and then I know she has a brief statement she'd like to make. Thank you for your attention.
Yes, Dr. Joubert.
Hi, my name is Dr. Alex Joubert. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak today. I'd like to let the board know that I abide by the APA ethical principles of forensic psychologists and the guidelines set forth by the Association of Family and Legal. My training is in clinical and forensic psychology, for which I've received specialized training and additional postdoctoral training. The client in this case was the court. My role was as a coordinator, and I was hired to perform evaluation of the family for legal decision-making and parenting time to include psychological evaluations of both parties and to provide the court in the best interest of the children after reviewing relevant information.
Dr. Joubert, I apologize to interrupt, but we are having some difficulties hearing you on our end. You're sort of like cutting out every like 5 to 10 seconds. So I don't know what needs to be done, but if you can speak more sort of in the microphone, that might solve the issue.
Slow down a bit, speak right into the microphone. If it happens, we'll let you know. And then probably you need to sign out and sign back in.
Okay. Do you want me to do that?
No, go ahead for the moment.
Okay. Responding to the mother's complaint, there seemed to be three concerns involved. The first was that she felt like perhaps there was a conflict due to my having attended the same high school as the father. This came to light during the course of the evaluation. I had no prior knowledge of this. I did not know the father. I did not know of the father. I did not share friends or associates of the father, and there was no conflict of interest. I strive to practice with the utmost of professionalism and would never put my own practice and reputation at risk by being unprofessional or deceitful in a case. Her second concern was that she objected to the diagnosis I gave her. This was a difficult and challenging diagnosis of the mother. It was based on testing and the totality of the information provided. My focus in these evaluations is on the best interest of the kids. There were serious concerns and alarming features of the mother's conduct during and prior to this evaluation. Her behavior was volatile, threatening, and dangerous. Her mission was focused on eliminating the father from the lives of the children and to align others against the father. She did not respect boundaries put into place by the law, the court, or the professional agencies. I would refer you to the report and the details I presented in my complaint response for more information. The third concern was that she generally disagreed with the ultimate findings in the comprehensive report submitted in December 2022. The report was based on 128 hours of work and extensive data. I outlined parenting and mental health concerns for both parents that impacted their ability to parent to varying degrees. I recommended therapy and parenting support for both parents and additional supervised parenting time for the mother. The complainant has not filed any concerns about me as an evaluator or objections to my report with the court. Ultimately, I believe this is a parent who is dissatisfied with the outcome of the court-ordered evaluation. I don't believe there was any wrongdoing or ethical concerns with respect to my work. I would simply ask that the complainant be dismissed for a lack of merit. Of course, if you have any specific questions about a particular item, I'm certainly able to address those. I trust the board will do its due diligence in this matter and find no wrongdoing on my part. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Joubert, and thank you for being here. At this time, let me see if there are any questions from the committee members for you. Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Chair. Dr. Joubert, at what point did you realize that you had gone to high school with the father?
I believe it was like about a month in to doing the evaluation.
And at what point did you reveal that information to others?
To who?
To others, to the court. At what point did you make it known that you had gone to high school with the father?
Right away, immediately.
So at the same time, okay, how did you do that?
I informed both parties and their attorneys.
Okay, through written documents?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Dr. Medina?
No questions at this time, Mr. Diner.
Thank you. So let me see if there are any further questions for ED or Dr. Joubert at this point. Hearing none, let's move to the deliberation phase of the case. Please keep in mind for those in attendance that deliberations is the time for the committee members to deliberate the case amongst themselves without interruptions from the complainants, licensees, attorneys representing them, or any other individuals. So Dr. Stewart, since you're the lead, would you please get us started?
Thank you, Mr. Diner. Yes, again, as the complainant reported, this is a high conflict divorce and child custody situation, and it's certainly contentious on all sides. At the point that Dr. Joubert, the possible conflict of interest or dual roles appears in terms of perhaps a prior relationship is suggested between the evaluator and the father. The psychologist's response to that is that she was unaware that she had gone to school with the father until the evaluation was underway. I don't know what could have been done at that point in time other than to reveal this information where the trier of fact, the court, would be aware of it. So it's not up to the parent, to the mother or the father, but it's up to the court to make decisions and to weigh what the examiner has placed in their report. I'm not seeing, in Dr. Joubert's response, the only thing that I see that may be rise to a level of concern would be the disclosure was verbal and not written notice on the bold note on page 4. Of the complaint, of the response. In terms of the diagnostics, Dr. Joubert in her report, and also as she's testified this morning, indicated that the diagnostic impressions were obtained from the psychological testing conducted on each parent. And that seems to be true in looking at the report and looking at the specific tests used, the personality tests, and the elevations on those particular scales. That seems to be appropriate to make that diagnostic impression. Does she make all the diagnostic impressions that are possible? Perhaps not. She was the experienced evaluator that the court ordered to conduct this assessment. And so she makes the assessment to her best ability and then presents that information to the court. And then the court decides. So she is not in charge of awarding custody or depriving someone of custody. That has to be done by the court. Thank you, Mr. Diner.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Dr. Medina, any thoughts?
No further comments. I agree with Dr. Stewart's comments.
Thank you, Dr. Medina. So in terms of sort of what I was thinking, the only thought on my mind was regarding the diagnosis offered for both mother and father. And I think, Dr. Stewart, you explained it better than I could have in terms of, you know, what the role of the psychologist is in these situations and what the role of the court is in taking that report and then making appropriate decisions in the case. So I think that concern that I had was addressed by the committee members and by my evaluation of the case file. So I'm hearing a consensus. Is there a motion?
Can I say something really fast? I mean, she disclosed it when my evaluation was done 4 months in and I had paid her $15,000. I had no choice but to stay with her.
I apologize. This is not the time for any further comments. Dr. Stewart, you had your hand raised.
Yes. In consideration of the entire case, in looking at the complaints made by the mother and the response by the psychologist, Dr. Gerber, and especially my review of the work product of the reviewed materials, including the report to the Superior Court, I'm not finding anything that rises to a level of violation of ethical standards, and certainly not anything that would be illegal at all. I move that the case be dismissed.
Second.
There is a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed. The motion carries. Thank you, everyone, for being here. If you have any further questions, you may contact our board staff. So let's move on to case 4D.
Thank you, board members. We appreciate your patience and time today.
Thank you.
Let me pull up the materials for case 4D, which is case number T-23-05 against Scott Keeling Torres. And since I'm the lead on the case, I'll provide the committee with a brief summary. So this is, as the case number suggests, a title violation. The complainant is MG, who is engaged in custody proceedings with two minor sons in Georgia. And Mr. Keeling, or Keeling Torres, as some of our materials refer to him, has never been licensed in Arizona in any capacity. And from September 2021 through April 2022, he worked at Santan Behavioral Health in Gilbert, Arizona, as a behavior intervention specialist. So the complaint relates to the fact that, you know, this is potentially an unlicensed practice. MG believes that Mr. Keeling fraudulently misrepresented himself, given the fact that he's not licensed in Arizona in any capacity. While in Arizona, Mr. Keeling provided some services, mentoring services, to the children whose custody proceeding this case relates to. In response, Mr. Keeling submitted a 2-page response. He denies that there is any violation of the statutes. He does not engage in any unauthorized practice of psychology on any level in the state. He uses his use of doctor in his title refers to his academic degree and was never intended to mislead the public or represent himself as a licensed professional in the state. So that is sort of my brief summary of the case. At this point, I see complainant MG is present. You may unmute yourself and use only your initials for the record, and you may make a brief statement of up to 5 minutes.
Good afternoon, or actually good morning, board members. I had never met or known of Mr. Scott Keeling before the filing of an affidavit that he had filed into a child custody case that stretches from Arizona to here, where I live in Georgia. Upon his filing in December of 2021, the affidavit was filed, e-filed at 6:08 p.m. the day prior to a hearing, which took place the following day morning. We had no time to, my attorney had, or myself had no time to research Mr. Keeling, his credentials or anything. What the only thing that we could find on him was that he did have the only thing we could find that he was licensed to do, period, was substance abuse counseling, and that was out of California. I contacted Ms. Michelson and requested information relative to any licensing that he may have in the state of Arizona with the Board of Psychological Examiner's office. She had relayed emailed back to me that that there's no one by that name licensed or ever been licensed in the state of Arizona. My attorney then filed a subpoena to San Tan Behavioral Health and requested his employment records be submitted to her for further observation and research. We did find that Mr. Keeling did fraudulently hold himself out in his application with San Tan Behavioral Health. He had stated that he had attended the University of California and received a doctorate in the field of psychology, in which there was no record found on the background report. It clearly states verified, no record. I don't know if that was an oversight by their part or not, but upon us requesting that information from San Tan Behavioral Health, I do know that he was released or relieved of his job duties there. Mr. Keeling did move on and continue his fraud in the state of Arizona. We did find him online. Since I do live in Georgia, I have to employ who I can and private investigators and such to find out information for me out there, because this does involve my two minor children. We did find him at Therapy Trust Behavioral Health. He was listed as the CEO. Also, he was listed as Dr. Scott Keelan, in which we or no one else have ever found any record of Mr. Keeling ever attending school anywhere. There's two different schools that he had actually put down that he had attended, and both of those were just all lies. They were just all lies to deceive the public and an attempt to actually deceive a superior court judge here in Georgia. Upon him filing and me receiving the affidavit Mr. Keeling submitted to the courts, the judge that was presiding over the case, that was the last case the judge had on his docket. He was set to retire. This was in December of 2021. So he retired the following year or that after that that case and or after that day, excuse me. The judge did take Mr. Keeling's credentials that he had provided to the court on his affidavit, where he clearly states that he is my name is Dr. Scott Keeling Torres, behavioral analyst, BHT, psychologist, PhD, and the facts stated herein are based upon my personal knowledge and observations. That right there, to me and through my research, yields a class 2 misdemeanor for any person in the state of Arizona that is not licensed to use those words, initials, phrases to lead or mislead the public into believing that they are someone who they're not. And he led not only myself, but my attorney, the defendant's attorney. For all I know, the defendant herself, I'm not sure as to her stance in all this, or where she stands with Mr. Keeling, or her relationship with Mr. Keeling, or how she even got to know Mr. Keeling or found him. None of that information has ever been provided by her. I do know that through Mr. Keeling filing this fraudulent order or fraudulent affidavit, excuse me, the judge did issue a temporary order further limiting my contact with my children because of the fictitious claims that Mr. Keeling purported in his sworn affidavit. That's about all I have. I have contacted everybody that I can contact, including each one of y'all, you board members individually and as a whole. I have contacted the Phoenix Police Department, where the business is located at, that Mr. Keeling had continued his impersonation and fraudulent treatments, and made everyone aware that this gentleman is seeing children. He's not, the only license that we can find for Mr. Keeling is that he was licensed or had a certificate for adult substance abuse counseling, but I'm not clear if he still holds that license or not. That was as of the last time I had checked, that was as of last updated on April 13th, 2020. His certificate date was April 13th, 2020. And that's all the information that I have. I know that this has caused me a lot of emotional distress, harm, and I'm sure to my children, who I haven't even got to speak to, because of the claims that Mr. Keeling has purported in his affidavit. But I'd like to make the board aware that I just have recently lost my mother. It was unexpected and sudden. So I am going through quite a lot right now. That does not deviate, doesn't cause me to deviate from handling this hearing right here. This is my children mean they're the most important things to me in my life. Most, they should be to everyone. This person, he shouldn't have been allowed to continue practicing in any state, and being near any children or my children or someone else's children for as long as he has been. After all the information had been, surfaced about Mr. Keeling. That's about all I have for the board. I appreciate y'all letting me speak.
Thank you, MG, and thank you for being here. So at this time, since I'm the lead on this case, I do not have any questions for MG, but let me see if any of the other committee members have any questions. Yes, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Dinar. MG, thank you for being with us today. Sorry about your recent loss with your mother. At what point did you discover that the suspected fraud, the fraudulent impersonation of a psychologist, at what point did you become aware of that?
My attorney became suspicious the night that the affidavit was filed on December 21st. On December 21st when the affidavit was filed, because it was filed so late, we didn't have any information, had never heard of Mr. Keeling before that time, or that he was even involved. So my attorney did, some background checks on him, and we couldn't find anything on him other than, that he was an adult substance abuse counselor, licensed in the state of California. And after, filing a subpoena, or subpoenaing his employment information from his previous employer, Santan Behavioral Health, through all of that information, his employment application, his resume, all of that, and then contacting UCLA, the registrar's office at UCLA, and finding out 100% certainty that this gentleman has not, and will never hold a license, or a diploma, from UCLA to practice anything. This guy is a fraud. And he should be, people like this that do things like this to children, they should be put under a jail.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I have no further questions, Mr. Dinar.
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Dr. Medina?
No further questions at this. No questions at this time, Mr. Dinar.
Thank you, Dr. Medina. So let's move on to Mr. Keeling Torres. And I believe I see your attorney, Michael Tamu, who is present. So you may unmute yourselves, introduce yourselves to the committee, and then you may make a brief statement of up to 5 minutes.
Yes, sir. My name is Michael Tamu. I'm here on behalf of Mr. Keeling. We wanted to address this. We wanted to come to this hearing to address MG and his allegations against Mr. Keeling. Essentially, this stems from a very intense custody battle. And while we know that these custody battles do get intense, there's a lot of emotions flying. And we did provide the board with what we thought was sufficient in order to show that Mr. Keeling never tried to make himself out to be something he wasn't. I could give you the examples of the affidavit, for instance, in, you know, contention with the fact that there was the order that was provided by the judge. The final order, when you're taking a look at the order, it states that the presiding judge acknowledges that the initial complainant of this matter, MG, had made baseless allegations against all the parties involved. The reason being is because at that time, MG had essentially, lost the hearing. Now, Mr. Keeling's representation of the whole matter was effectively made through the affidavit that I also provided. And what that affidavit stated was from another board attorney in Georgia at the time, stated that the judge had incorrectly referenced Mr. Keeling, who he was and who he was to the case. And unfortunately, as we stated, and MG did correctly state, he did retire. It was his last case. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate for both parties because we do know while MG does have that, you know, non-closure of whether the mistake was made by the presiding judge at that time, we do know that Mr. Keeling never did state that he was a psychologist at that time. And then if we move to, for instance, the website, Mr. Keeling was working on with the web developers. So essentially, it was his job to kind of report exactly what the company did, create a mission statement. The web developers actually just included a regular email address that they posted there. Mr. Keeling never told them to post there. He never gave his notice to them saying that he was a CEO of a company, which he's not. Essentially, they just threw email addresses on there because what they were trying to do was just have placeholders so that way they can envision what was going on. But right when Mr. Keeling found out that the website incorrectly addressed everything was pulled down. I mean, he was just in charge of the website content. He wasn't, you know, taking a look at it and making sure everything looked good. I think the most important thing is talking to MG and referencing his fact that Mr. Keeling never attended school, essentially, right? And that he doesn't have any transcripts or any kind of degrees to prove that he has the education that's founded to be able to state that he is Dr. Scott Keeling. With that being said, we've provided that transcript. We provided a transcript from the University of California that held all of his accreditations, that held the grades he got, everything that we needed to show to the board in order for you guys to understand that this is an instance that really just stems from retaliation to all parties that were on the opposing side. Now, at the end of the day, I don't discredit the fact that MG's going through a lot with the custody and, you know, our condolences are with him and his family at this time. But ultimately, Mr. Scott Keeling is not a bad man. His character is good. He's committed his whole life to really this trade and trying to do something different. Yes, he does work at the Therapy Trust Behavioral Center. And essentially what he does is he's at an administrative position. At this point, what he realized more than anything was that his duty essentially was to help others in creating a better center for these people that have substance abuse issues. Obviously, with what's going on in Arizona, the need is higher than ever. And he just took on a role in order to be able to be administrative in that sense and help put the proper doctors and put the proper physicians in place. So with that being said, you know, and when we did respond to the original complaint, we responded with what I believe was more than enough information to help show that Mr. Keeling has never referred to himself in any as a psychologist, any shape or form. And whatever the affidavit stated was something that was transcribed and that was supposed to be corrected. For those reasons, he's never misled or misrepresented himself. This is a single situation that has stemmed from this, you know, pretty contentious custody battle. And for those reasons, we don't believe that any that really anything should come of this and that this case should essentially be dismissed at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Tamu. Do we have Dr. Keeling present?
I believe Dr. Keeling is...
I'm present.
I don't see you. I apologize. So if you have video capability, would you kindly... yes, I see you now. Thank you, Dr. Keeling, for being here. So I have a few questions to ask you. I see that in the affidavit and for the committee members, that's at page 11 of our materials, you state that my name is Dr. Scott Keeling Torres, behavioral analyst, BHT, psychologist, PhD. Is that correct?
I didn't state any of that. The affidavit portion, I just made my statements, which were asked of me from Susan's attorney, which is the grandmother, I believe, what had been said by the children about MG, which was very basic. I had declared several times to the attorney and to the judge that I did not have any of those capacities in the state of Arizona. And I had answered to that. Those were not my statements.
I see what you're saying. On page 13 of our materials, there are two signatures. I believe one of them is a signature of the notary public, and the other one, I'm not able to tell whose signature it is. So would you identify to the extent you can whose signatures they are?
I don't know who signed that. So the affidavit was sent over from Susan's attorney after I made my statement of what the children had stated about their father, which was very limited. And I had to take it to a notary, and then that form went back to the attorneys in Georgia, which I have, you know, nothing to do with other than they wanted to know what the children had stated about their father and nothing more.
So I'm confused. Did you or did you not sign this affidavit?
I did sign the document, but I don't know who else signed the document.
So you signed in front of a notary public, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. So it's your signature on the affidavit, and in the affidavit, regardless of who prepared the actual affidavit, you say, my name is Dr. Scott Keeling Torres, behavioral analyst, PhD, psychologist, PhD, correct?
It is stated that way, but it's also stated on the record that it was a mistake, which I had another affidavit from the attorney that had the knowledge of that and the transcript of that. So it was corrected in court at the time.
If I may interject. Yeah, and I think that's what... Mr. Keeling's trying to say is when he did go ahead and sign it, he signed it quickly. And then once he received notification that that's what it stated, it was quickly addressed that that wasn't the case. So that's why right afterwards, it literally reflects on the record and through the record that I do not hold these. And that's why he's trying to state that he did sign it, but it just was a matter of basically him not paying attention to essentially what he signed. He just signed where his name was.
So I have a question for staff. Is that follow-up statement somewhere in our materials? If someone could point me to it, I would appreciate it.
I believe the affidavit that he's referring to from the grandmother's attorneys on page 50, but I believe that's an affidavit to the board. I don't know what affidavit for that court case that he's referring to.
That is the affidavit that I'm referring to.
If I may speak, there were...
Sorry, MG, I'm sorry. I'm questioning yes. The respondent at this point. I'll get back to you if I need yes. something. Yes. So it's the affidavit from the grandmother's attorney to the court in which Mr. Keeling, you're saying there is a correction to your affidavit.
Correct.
And did you submit any statement to the court correcting your own previous statement?
That's why the affidavit from that attorney was handled, because that judge had retired. She was able to call forward the transcripts of the court, and then she made that affidavit stating what was on the record. I don't live in Georgia. I have nothing to do with Georgia courts. I don't know how all that works over there. So that is why we went there.
All right, thank you. And in paragraph 2 of your affidavit, again, at page 11 of our materials for the committee members, you said, I'm acquainted with, I assume these are two minors' names. I'm acquainted with BG and IG through behavior coaching mentoring services. Do you recall that?
Yes.
Could you describe what behavior coaching mentoring services you were engaged in?
My job title was to meet with the boys and work with them on behavioral issues, you know, via contact or life skills, that kind of thing, sports, activities, and that's it.
Are you aware of the definition of practice of psychology in Arizona?
Yes.
Could you describe it for us?
It's a licensed, board-licensed position that requires testing and all that kind of good stuff.
So were you doing any psychological assessments for the minor children?
No.
Were you doing any diagnosis, treatment, or correction of mental, emotional, behavioral, psychological abilities?
No.
Were you engaged in dealing with illnesses or disorders, or purporting or attempting to do you know, activities related to that?
Can you rephrase that? I don't understand what you're asking.
So were you dealing with providing specific services relating to illnesses or disorders?
Santan, behavioral health, handled that. So I just was given a caseload of kids and a job, and that's what I did.
Thank you. Are you aware of the definition of behavior analysis
Yes.
in Arizona? And would you please describe it for us?
A behavioral analyst is an additional education requirement that gives insight to behavioral analytics.
So did you implement any system of environmental modifications, behavior modifications in coaching or mentoring the minor children?
No. The only things that were given were, you know, coping skills if they were upset or angry or needed to speak. And then if there were any additional services that were needed, they're referenced back to the therapist and you know, the program director at Santan Behavioral.
All right, thank you. That's all the questions I have at this time. Let me see if any of the committee members have questions to ask Mr. Keeling, Dr. Stewart.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Mr. Keeling, in the affidavit on page 10, 11, 12, 13 of our materials, item 4, IG has a specific diagnosis listed. And it seems like there is indication that harm would be done if in item 3, that there would be harm to the children if the children were reintroduced with the father. And that's in the affidavit that you signed.
That comment was based upon what the children had stated to me when they were asked about visiting their father. I don't know MG. I didn't know MG. It was just a simple statement that one of the children had made. So it was simple and direct. They did not want to meet the father or reacquaint with the father. And it was a quick statement. So there are no analytics involved. It was just a statement of what they had said.
But you put that in writing and you signed your name to it as an affidavit in the Superior Court of Arizona in and for the county of Maricopa.
Actually, I didn't file that in the county of Maricopa or in the state of Arizona.
Where was that filed?
Georgia.
I'm looking at...
I'm looking at
page 11, and it says state of Arizona, county of Maricopa.
Because that's where I preside. That wasn't given in Maricopa County. And again, I did not write the embodiment of the affidavit. I just wrote the statement piece, and then I was asked to sign it, which is what I did.
I that concerns me a great deal. That it seems kind of frivolous to listen to a child and to just transfer that information into a document, a legal document that would have impact in a child custody situation. That's a tremendous lack of responsibility.
Well, it's not because I wasn't informed that it was a child custody battle or hearing at all. I was asked by Ms. Hammond's attorney to make a statement based upon them speaking to him. I had nothing to do with or any knowledge of what they were doing with custody or any of that. Not Mr. my.
If I may, at the time that Mr. Killing was actually assigned to this matter, there was actually no information given to him of what the pretense and what this matter was about. Essentially, what he mentored, obviously, and stated he did what he did, but he wasn't aware that this was going to be this huge contentious battle. He had no idea who MG was. The only people that he knew were the children, essentially, in this matter. So when they stated
and grandmother.
And the grandmother, when he stated that to them, it was out of a sense of precaution, essentially, that this is what they've stated. And obviously with the therapist, it's their job to go out and dig deeper in order to see if there's something more that was present. So I think that that's what he was going to do when I had a conversation with Mr. Keeling regarding it. It was more of a matter of, look, I've never had an issue with Mr. MG. Obviously, I didn't even know MG. He could have been the nicest guy in the world. But automatically, if a child is stating something, I mean, we all have a duty, especially if a child is stating something that could be having to do with their well-being, that he just stated it back to the attorney and the attorney turned it into transcription. And I think that that's where the issue stood, was that these were all statements made and he was told to sign, obviously, and it was just his job at Santan to provide mentoring services. And then it turned into, you said this, you said this, you said this, thinking that Santan essentially would be the person protecting him during this time. And his job duties. So I believe that that's where that stems from, sir.
So it's certainly the slippery slope of being in a therapeutic relationship, and that therapeutic relationship turns into a forensic conflict. And the responsibility is, as I'm recalling board cases before, the responsibility is on the individual who signs his name to papers to be aware of that. Ignorance is what excuse does ignorance play in this, Mr. Tamu?
Well, essentially, it's not about ignorance. It's about the fact that Santan and the attorney that were assigned to the matter, sir, were the people that he trusted to transcribe his thoughts and his statements. So, yes, of course, as we all know, ignorance of the law is absolutely no defense to ignorance in general. But ultimately, the statements that were taken were transcribed by another individual in which he said, which he signed. And I think that the most important thing is that we are harping in a lot onto the fact that you know, Mr. Keeling did sign this. But I also want you to take into consideration that the allegations against him from MG stem from the custody battle itself. That Mr. Keeling's job was to mentor, which he reflected onto the court transcript, which was provided. The court order shows that the judge knows what Mr. Keeling said, what Mr. Keeling's role was, because it was stated. The only thing was that the judge incorrectly at that time listed, incorrectly identified him as somebody he wasn't. And that was on accident. There was just no way to go back at that time. So in response to the ignorance question, by all means, ignorance is not any defense of law, but ultimately he trusted his employer and the attorney that was heading the matter to do the right thing. And essentially they failed. And look, at the end of the day, Mr. Keeling is sorry. It's not, and we've had these conversations. Mr. Keeling is sorry about what MG went through, and it was nothing personal. It was really just a matter of what Santan told him to do as a mentor, who he reported to, and that's what it really boiled down to. But obviously, you know, in a contentious battle like we're talking about, these things do get pretty aggressive, you know. But the, you know, the allegations against the attorney involved, everybody involved, everybody was attacked, and I could see that an aggressive why MG could be so upset. But ultimately, attacking somebody's character based on, you know, a certain mistake is a whole nother being.
I have no further questions, Mr. Dinar.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Dr. Medina, any questions?
Has there been, well, take that back. Were you referred to a psychologist at Santan? Where you were employed?
No, I was not. I was referred to as doctor, which I have a PhD and I'm entitled to that.
I don't have any further questions.
Thank you, Dr. Medina. Yes, Ms. Galvin.
I don't know if I my notes are clear. Mr. Keeling, why were you terminated from Santan?
I was not terminated. I put my notice in and left.
Were you under any type of investigation at that time?
No.
And what was the basis, the reason for you resigning at the time that you did?
I was moving on, and I was in the middle of an adoption with another kid, and I lived pretty far from that location.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ms. Gavin. So I have some further questions. So I'm looking at the affidavit that the attorney submitted. It's on page 50 of our materials. Have you, Mr. Keeling, reviewed that affidavit?
I reviewed that affidavit when it was first sent, so I haven't seen it since.
Could you point me to a statement in that affidavit that mentions that there were errors in your affidavit that you submitted previously?
Mike, you have the affidavit.
I do have the affidavit. I don't know, Scott, if you have it pulled up, but this affidavit actually was not generated to do anything except for to show essentially the board that this attorney that was representing him was acknowledging the fact that the judge referred to him incorrectly and just setting the basis of what the description and what their understanding of Mr. Keeling's involvement in the matter was. That's all this affidavit was meant to be.
And I also stated on the record to Ms. Hammond's attorney that I was not licensed. And when they had used the terms, I had corrected it, which is what the affidavit from the attorney was requested for. I also stated that to the judge when I was questioned. I wasn't even questioned in the courtroom, I don't think. I don't remember. And I stated that I was not licensed and my capacity was nothing more than a behavioral coach and a mentor.
I also believe that on number 7 of that same affidavit, where it states, after the hearing ended, Judge Emerson issued an order where he called Scott the boy's therapist, which was incorrect. He was not their therapist. Essentially, I mean, you know, my interpretation of that is that if the attorney knew that he wasn't the therapist, obviously he was acknowledging that Scott knew he wasn't the therapist as well. This statement was made by the attorney and not something that Scott was really supposed to say, I didn't know. This was made as a proof that another attorney acknowledged that Scott had nothing to do with it in that fashion. He didn't represent himself as that. So I believe that number seven on its own goes to show that there was that the attorney is acknowledging Mr. Keeling's denial of what he was called by the judge.
All right. Thank you. Dr. Medina, you have questions.
Yes. But where in that affidavit does it clarify that he's not a psychologist, as the previous affidavit stated? I don't see that.
Dr. Medina, could you please let us know for the record of who are you asking that question?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Dr. Keeling or the attorney?
Either one, Mr. Keeling first.
Again, I don't have the affidavit in front of me. I can't switch screens. So if I do that, then
okay,
it will cut you off. So my attorney has that in front of him.
Mr. Temel, then.
Yes, Ms. Medina. Yeah. So essentially, you're right. It does not say that. But at that time, the question wasn't whether he was a psychologist. It was a question whether he was a therapist. And I guess at this point, like I said before, this affidavit was provided on behalf of Mr. Keeling to show what his role was in the sense of an attorney that was defending the opposing party to MG. So when he stated, or when she is stating that, you know, he wasn't the therapist, it should go to show that he wasn't actually acting as a psychologist at all. I mean, and to be honest with you, I think although we're harping on one piece of evidence, essentially in one exhibit, we have to go back and look at what the orders say, because we need to be looking at this in a totality. The order also shows that he states multiple times he did not do anything but mentoring. So yes, you're correct. It doesn't necessarily say that in this statement, but we can resort to the order where it does state that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Diner and committee members, I just want to make one point before I proceed with other questions. There was no information that we received from Mr. Temu indicating that Mr. Keeling had provided any kind of written verification or documentation to the court revising their affidavit, clarifying that he was not a psychologist or behavior analyst. So it is my understanding that nothing has been provided to the court indicating such.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson, for that information. We have pretty much asked all of the questions we could think of to Mr. Keeling. I just wanted to give one last chance to MG. If you have anything brief, I believe you were attempting to say something previously.
Yes, sir. Like I previously stated, the judge in which the judge that provided, resided over this hearing, he's no longer a superior court judge, but he sat on the bench for 29 years. He also still sits on the Georgia Court of Appeals. This judge does not make mistakes. I've been before this judge many times before. On child custody matters and divorce matters. There were no subsequent affidavits or corrections that were filed into the case. I just got through reviewing the case log. There were no notes, no affidavits other than the one that I have submitted to you, to the board. Where Mr. Keeling does state that he is, you know, a psychologist with a PhD from UCLA. And I've also provided the emails that I've received from the registrar's office at UCLA, where they, as a courtesy, stated that they could confirm that there was no match for Keeling Scott or Keeling Torres Scott in the UCLA student record database. And that email was sent to me April 6th of this year. This is caused.
Thank you, MG. I think we have all of the materials in front of us.
Yes.
So at this point, let's begin our deliberations. And again, for those in attendance, please keep in mind that deliberation is time for the committee members to deliberate the case amongst themselves without interruptions from complainants, respondents, attorneys representing them, or any other individuals. So I'll start the deliberation. So I'm looking at the affidavit that Mr. Keeling signed, again, starting at page 11. And I'm seeing that Mr. Keeling identifies himself as behavioral analyst and as a psychologist. And I'm looking at our statutes, ARS 32-2084, which says if somebody who is not licensed as a psychologist in the state uses psychology, psychological, or psychologist, and any combination of words, initials, or symbols that leads the public to believe the person is licensed to practice in this state is a violation. And I'm looking at ARS section 32-2091.12, which says that any use of any combination of words, initials, and symbols that leads the public to believe the person is licensed to practice behavior analysis in the state when you're not licensed, then that's a violation. So keeping those two sections in mind and looking at the affidavit clearly states behavioral analyst and psychologist. And from the review of our materials and from the answers we got today, I don't see any correction to that submitted to the court in Georgia. And I believe it's the job of the person who realizes that they made an incorrect statement to promptly act to make that correction so that other people may not mistake the statement that was made, and then everything else sort of snowballs from there. And I think from the orders that the Georgia Superior Court entered, the court was simply relying on the statements submitted to the court via affidavit. So it's not necessarily the court's error. The error sort of originated from an affidavit, which is acknowledged and admitted to be incorrect, and that error was not corrected. So I'm inclined to refer this case to the full board, but I also want to see if Dr. Medina and Dr. Stewart have any thoughts. Dr. Medina.
Thank you, Mr. Diner. I agree with your statement. I think the decision, or what the judge sort of used, was that affidavit, and there isn't any evidence that there was a follow-up with the court to correct the affidavit. I'm also concerned that someone would sign an affidavit without reading it or verifying the information in that affidavit, because of the type of document it is correct. And so I don't see the part where there is a correction to that document.
Thank you, Dr. Medina. Dr. Stewart.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chair. I certainly agree with Dr. Medina as well as Mr. Dinar. As well-intentioned, I don't know that there is a malicious intent, but the signature is out there, and that's the unfortunate part. I'm reading the other affidavit in the Superior Court of Maricopa County. And the affidavit was signed, and the discussion within the affidavit is reintroduction of the father after the damage causing clinical depression or other psychological issues, freely throwing around mental health diagnoses that are better served to come from psychologists and psychiatrists and not from someone who has no license whatsoever. That concerns me. And again, I appreciate the slippery slope. It started out as perhaps a well-intended clinical situation, but quickly devolved into tremendous conflict. And that concerns me greatly. And I concur that it should be referred to the full board for consideration to send to additional authorities for review.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. I'll make a motion to refer the case to the full board for complaint T-23-05 for possible violation of ARS 32-2084 for use of psychology and words in that combination, and for potential violation of 32-2091.12 for using behavior analyst and combination of those words.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed. The motion carries. Again, thank you everyone for being here on this case. If you have any further questions, you may contact our board staff.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
So let's move on to the to 4E, which is the last case on the agenda. Let me quickly pull up the materials. So the case number is T-23-06 against Austin McCaw. And since I'm the lead on the case, I will provide the committee with an overview. Austin McCaw, SID, whose license was surrendered effective 12-9-2022, so December 9, 2022. This is a complaint against Ms. McCaw. The complainant is ES, a licensed psychologist who works as a consultant with the Arizona Department of Child Safety. She filed a complaint against Dr. McCall, alleging that Dr. McCall continued to practice as a psychologist after surrendering her license in violation of 32-2084. So the facts surrounding that were that Dr. McCall supplied psychological evaluation reports to DCS between March and April of 2023, when her license was surrendered in December of 2022, and that's the basis of this complaint. In response, Dr. McCall admits that she submitted these psychological evaluation reports to DCS after surrendering her license, and she provides certain reasons for doing so. When this matter was called to the attention of her employer, the employer and Dr. McCall had a conversation, and the result of that conversation was Dr. McCall was fired for practicing without a license, and she had not informed her then current employer that she had surrendered her license. So that's my quick summary of the case. Let me see if I think complainant ES is not able to attend, but
Mr. Chair, I believe she is actually here.
Okay. So at this time, let's see if ES, thank you for being here. You may unmute yourself, identify yourself only with your initials, and then you may make a brief statement of up to 5 minutes.
Hi, and I do apologize. I didn't realize I was supposed to let Ms. Michelson know I was attending. So I do apologize. My name is ES, and as you stated, I serve as a unit consultant for the Department of Child Safety. Part of my role is to review psychological evaluations that are referred through the department with the case managers. So I had reviewed a psychological evaluation conducted by Dr. McCall. And I later discovered, initially I discovered that, you know, she was, I believe, initially put under, she had to have like a practice supervisor. So that was initially what I discovered. And I informed DCS immediately. And then through further discovery, I found that her license had indeed been suspended or surrendered, excuse me, in December. So again, I let DCS know of this immediately. And then I did feel I needed to file the complaint.
Thank you, ES, and thank you for your statement. So could you sort of like give me a timeline of when did you realize the reports were, when did you look into Dr. McCall's credentials after receiving the reports?
I'm sorry, if I may interrupt. I have realized that I know Dr. South from a previous family relationship. If the board needs independent advice, I can have someone stand by to provide that. I don't believe that this would affect my advice to you in any way. She is not a party, but the complainant in this matter. But I wanted to disclose that on the record.
Thank you, Ms. Gavin. I don't think a standby attorney is needed, and I think there wouldn't be any potential conflict. But yeah, I appreciate Ms. Gavin stating that for the record. Yes, back to you. Could you tell us, like, when after receiving the report did you look into Dr. McCall's credentials?
After I received it, it was pretty immediate. There was a new contract that went out, and so there's some new providers. So upon reading it, I had some concerns that it seemed like a very basic psychological evaluation, whereas, you know, the ones through the department should be forensic in nature and kind of have that forensic lens. So I became curious at that time, and that's when I did look into Dr. McCall, you know, immediately after I reviewed the evaluation. Again, I initially just discovered that she had some difficulties with the board, and she was required to get, you know, ongoing supervision and, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's initially what I informed DCS of. And then, you know, later I looked into it a little bit more, and that's when I discovered that the license was surrendered.
Thank you. So the reports in question were dated March and April 2023. So roughly like April is when you looked at the credentials.
Yes, I actually only reviewed one of the reports. I believe I have heard that she conducted multiple evaluations for DCS, but I, as the unit consultant, only reviewed one that was brought to me through my office. Yes, and I believe it was around April.
Thank you. That's all the questions I have. Let's see if any of the other committee members have any questions for ES.
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I do want to let the committee members know that one of the representatives from DCS, initials AD, is present here today. So if there's any questions for DCS directly, I believe she's available to answer those.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Do any of the committee members have any questions for AD?
No, Mr. Chair.
No.
All right, so let's move on to Dr. McCall. I see you're present. Thank you for being here. You may unmute yourself, identify yourself for the record, and you may make a statement of up to 5 minutes.
I'm Dr. Austin McCall. I don't know. I surrendered my license. As you all know, I'm a single mother of two children. It has been a struggle mentally and financially. Everything I have worked for the last 10 years was taken with one relapse in 3 years. As psychologists, we know that relapse is a part of addiction, and I relapsed once and it was immediately to revoke my license. I feel like I have trauma from this board. But I was contacted by a place that I had had a contract with a year before. I had taken psychologists down off of all the things. I've tried to take it down off of Psychology Today so many times, and I just can't take it down. I put wellness coach in my thing, but it still says psychologist. It's off of everything else. I've contacted Psychology Today to take it down. I don't know how to do it. I did it out of desperation. I have two kids. I was almost in foreclosure on my home. I knew I shouldn't have done. I did 4 evaluations. I regret it very much. I've sold all my testing supplies. I was just trying to keep my kids housed, clothed, safe. I don't have anything else to say.
Thank you, Dr. McCall, and I appreciate the concerns that you're raising. I do not have any questions for you at this time. Let me see. Yes, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. McCall, thank you for being here today. I know this has been a difficult road for you for sure, and interacting with the board has been tumultuous at times. I see on your one-page response to the complaint that you have returned all compensation paid to you by the previous employer. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And that's my only question at this point. Thank you.
Dr. Medina.
Thank you, Mr. Diner. Thank you for being here. Dr. McCall, can you list your efforts to find employment after surrendering your license in December of 2022?
Yeah. Can I list my efforts? Mm-hmm. To be honest, I've been really depressed. I have a job as a BHT, even though I'm a fucking doctor. Sorry for cursing. It's been really hard, honestly. I don't know how to be a life coach. I don't know how to present myself as a life coach. I don't know what to do, but I have started a job consulting, and I'm a BHT, so I have a couple different pots in the fire. I don't know what the term is. I'm doing what I can. I'm trying to. That's all I got. I'm trying. It's been really hard. I worked a really long time for this, and now it's just gone. And I don't think it's ever coming back. And it's really hard. It's really hard.
No further questions, Mr. Diner. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Medina. So at this time, let's begin our deliberations. Again, for those in attendance, please keep in mind that deliberations is the time for the committee to deliberate the case amongst themselves without interruptions from complainants, respondents, attorneys representing them, or any other individuals. So since I'm the lead, I'll start with the deliberations. So this is a title violation case. You know, we have a an individual who surrendered their license and 3 months after that submitted a psychological evaluation to the Department of Child Safety. And Dr. McCall admits doing that. And, you know, I understand some of the struggles that Dr. McCall is going through, but, you know, our job is to look at our statutes and apply them to individual cases. And here there seems to be the use of psychologist and holding oneself out as a psychologist licensed when Dr. McCall did not have a license. So that seems to me a violation of ARS 32-2084. So I'm inclined to refer this case to the full board. I believe the most that will happen is a cease and desist. And I know Dr. McCall understands that she can't hold herself out as a psychologist, but, you know, we have to look at the violation that is admitted and take it at face value. Any thoughts, Dr. Stewart and Dr. Medina?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I think Dr. McCall seems to have made a valiant effort to rectify some of the errors that she has made. I think surrendering her license as she did, I think obviously it has created some emotional distress within her. I think the time that she held herself out to be a psychologist, a licensed psychologist, and did the evaluations, that there was an impairment, an emotional impairment, depression, and stress involved. I think that right now she is returned. She's attempted to make compensation, to return compensation she's received. I certainly applaud those efforts. I think to, you know, just in my pondering, can she ever get to a point of relicensure? I guess I don't know that. I defer to our board attorney and to the executive director on that. But I think Dr. McCall has put forth effort to become a BHT, and that seems to be something that's feasible at this point in time. I think that referral to the full board with a recommendation of just simply a cease and desist letter would be appropriate at this point in time. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Dr. Medina, your thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Diner. You know, while I can appreciate the difficult situation Dr. McCall is in, I cannot overlook how egregious, deliberate, and selfish this was. And our role is to protect the public, the people that were served by these evaluations are already under a lot of stress. They're involved with DCS, right? That is a highly stressful situation. And now DCS, you know, or someone has to go back and say, oh, by the way, you need to redo the evaluations because who evaluated you was not in a position to be able to do so. I mean, it's wrong, and it's harmful to the public. So I do agree that this needs to be sent to the board, to the full board for review.
Thank you, Dr. Medina. I'll make a motion to refer this case to the full board for a potential violation of ARS 32-2084.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed. Motion carries. Thank you, everyone, again for being here. And if you have any further questions, you can reach out to our board staff. So with this, let's see, that's all of the matters on our agenda. I'll make a motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
Second.
This time, Dr. Stewart wasn't jumping in with the second. second goes to Dr. Medina. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed. Motion carries. We are adjourned. It is 11:33. Thank you, everybody, for your